Hello. In this audio snippet, we plan to continue talking about the post-American Civil War period, and to talk about Black America in general. But before we do that, we'd like to talk about three seemingly unrelated issues related to stories that have happened in this last week since our previous audio snippet. And they are relevant in the sense that they talk about the condition of the country and where we are, and they're all very very sad things to consider as America is going down its path of its final death. As we've said in previous audio snippets, time is running out. America is about to die less than a year from now. And once it dies, its calling, it will be gone, and this country will then go into an irretrievable, irremediable decline into third world status. And it will never fulfill the greatness it was called to fulfill. So one of the stories that seemed interesting this week was about this order by the regime that has the power right now in the US, the regime that stole the election of 2020. For some reason, declared that all Venezuelans who arrive from Mexico will be automatically deported back to Mexico and sent out of the country. And that was kind of an interesting story to read because obviously this regime has been allowing illegal immigrants to come in droves to fill the country, and it's their intent to turn this into a third world mentality country where people depend on government and vote Democrat year after year after year. It was kind of curious to wonder why they would do such a thing. And it's interesting that that this order came out because as we've said before, it's as if these audio snippets seem to hit something in the atmosphere, and they trigger responses even from people who don't listen to these audio snippets, but it seems to be triggering things. And we spoke in one of the previous audio snippets about how Venezuelans are a bit of an exception compared to the rest of the illegal immigrants who are coming in, because many of them are coming to flee communism. Venezuela is a communist country run by a dictator, and many of and the country that once used to be relatively prosperous and stable has turned into this pathetic example of a country with rampant poverty and crime and utter decay of a society that used to be relatively stable. And so they're coming here, but many of them are coming with this awareness that communism doesn't work, and a lot of them are also leaving, exiting because they are being viciously persecuted, politically persecuted by this communist dictatorship. So they come here with this mind. A lot of them, not all of them, but a lot of them come with a mindset of wanting to be in a place of freedom and to escape communism. So people who come to America to yearn for freedom and who have a negative experience with communism are not good illegals to the Democrats, because they will because of their love for freedom and their hatred of communism, they will more than likely vote Republican instead of Democrat. So they come with a message that is contrary to what the Democrats preach, of government, of a big government and dependence on government and the like. So Venezuelans are different. They're kind of the modern day version of Cubans, and that's another group of immigrants that Democrats really, really do not like too much. You may recall back in the 1990s, there was this case of this little Cuban kid who was here in the U.S. and his father was in Cuba, and Castro and his father, who was kind of like aligned with this, with Castro, either willingly or forcibly, was like doing this international demand to request that his son be returned to Cuba, and his son was with relatives in Florida, and he was here, and because of that he was legally allowed to stay, because any Cuban who makes it to the mainland in America by law is allowed to stay. And that has been a rule because of how Cubans, when they flee, they are fleeing communism, and we've given them a special exemption, justifiably so, I would say. So he was here legally, and you would think the Democrats, who want diversity and who love the Hispanic culture and always are always praising how great the Hispanic culture is, that they would be happy to have this kid here, but no, they made a big deal out of it. I think his name was Elian Gonzalez, and he was eventually dragged out of his house by federal agents, and his family was pleading for mercy, and the federal agents just took him and return him to Cuba, and it was this big international political victory for Castro, that little bastard who's burning in hell as we speak. If you could hear, as I've said before, if you could hear his screams, he is really, really, really screaming. He's being tormented for all of eternity. So, and I rejoice when I hear those screams, and he's still angry. He's resentful of the punishment. He does not accept it, and he will never accept it, and that's why the torment will be so great, because there is no change in that son of a bitch. But the thing is that this was a big victory for the communist regime in Cuba, and the Democrats cooperated. They basically threw the kid out of the country, and if they could throw all the Cubans, especially the older ones, out of the country, they would, because they tend to be, they come for reasons that are different from the rest of the illegals or Hispanics who come. They tend to come for the love of the country and the love of freedom. The same, more or less the same kind of love that drove the immigration from Europe in the 19th and early 20th century. People who were not coming here just because they wanted to make a quick buck and then go back to their home country. They were coming here because they saw something special about America. They were in love with America. They were in love with the Statue of Liberty and freedom and everything America represents, not just the money. And the Venezuelans are a little bit like that, some of them, and the Democrats don't like that. And also, the Venezuelans come with a message: we are living the consequences of leftist communism, and because they come with that experience, they are a threat to the Democrat Party, because they come bearing a warning, a living warning of what happens when you follow certain ideologies. And so it's sad. And what drew my attention about this decree that all Venezuelans had to be sent back to Mexico is that, well, so you can do that. I said to myself, we can take these illegal aliens and just send them back to Mexico. I thought we couldn't do that. And if we can do that with the Venezuelans, why not do it with everybody else? Because at one point I was saying to myself, well, is there a kind of some sort of legal problem with if anybody who is not Mexican crosses the border, the southern border from Mexico into the U.S. illegally, and it gets caught and gets sent back to Mexico, are the Mexicans saying, hey, we're not taking that guy back. We don't know who he is. I thought that was the problem, but apparently it isn't. You can just send them back if they came through the border, whether they be Mexicans or not. And it makes sense because it's Mexico's responsibility that they are there to begin with. Mexico has allowed them to be in the country illegally. So if they were able to sneak into the U.S. through Mexico, then it's Mexico's responsibility to deal with them and to have them sent back. So that drew my attention. Why aren't all illegal aliens sent back to Mexico like the Venezuelans? And why the Venezuelans are being targeted? And to me, that and obviously that was a rhetorical question because we all know the answer. That was a sad thing and doesn't seem to get reported by the leftist media in America. Because it just it's not convenient to talk about that, it's really that was a sad thing to hear or read in the news. We're living in this very very evil time, and the second thing that really saddened me was this story about a man called Alex Jones, who. Apparently said something. He is a conservative, and he's very well known in conservative circles. And he has his show, I think it's a radio show or a television show or both. I'm not sure. And he said something controversial about an incident, a shooting incident, I think it's the Sandy Hook, I think, a shooting incident where there was this mass killing of people, and I believe that as that story was coming out, he said something on his radio show saying that was all fake, that there really was no massacre or something to that effect. I really don't know all the details. But he said something that turned out to be false. He was just, if I'm not mistaken, just saying what he suspected was the case, that this was just another false effort by the Democrats to then promote gun control, because they do that every single time there's a shooting. Then, you know, let's have gun control. And usually the legislation they pass would not have prevented the shooting, the massacre that triggered the legislation. So it's always a ruse. It's always an excuse, because that's what Democrats need all the time. It's always an excuse to do what they want to do anyway. But in this case, he said something, and he went the outrageous route and said something like he, if I'm not mistaken, almost went so far as saying that there was no massacre, that it was all fake, or something like that, and he was sued for that by the families or something, by a family or more that was affected by this mass shooting, and he was ordered this past week to pay $965 million in damages to the families. $965, I could be wrong on the exact number, but it was over $900 million. That's almost a billion with a B. for making a statement that was incorrect. And it was, and then he later apologized for it, but to no avail. Whether you like him or not, whether you agree or disagree, you have to agree that $965 million for saying something that was not true is a little over the top. And if you think about it, with the media currently saying so many stupid and false things and accusations, it seems kind of strange that they're picking on this one person when there are all these other people that are doing worse things, much worse things, and they're getting away with murder, literally. And so that saddened me, because that was like a sign of, really, we are fighting anyone who is trying to speak the truth. And I don't agree with Alex Jones on a lot of things. He is a worshiper of the Constitution and the Founding Fathers and all that. And he also falls prey to what conservatives fall to. And it's this constant obsession with dark conspiracies. And not that a lot of those conspiracies are not true. That's not necessarily the issue. The problem is that these conservatives tend to attribute the problems of the world to this orchestrated plot being done behind the scenes by these big movers and shakers that is intent on destroying the world, and then that's why the world is in the mess it's in. And yes, there are dark forces at play, but they are not as coordinated as these people believe they are. And the problem also is that a lot of the problems we have are the consequences of conservatism being unwilling to embrace the full truth. And conservatives, instead of looking within, you know, starting with the man in the mirror and saying, are we wrong in something? And becoming reconciled with the truth, instead of doing that, they keep attributing the collapse of the system to some evil operators who are coming in to undermine what was otherwise a perfect society and a perfect system left by the Founding Fathers, when in fact the system is decaying because of all the flaws, fundamental flaws in the American system, the American culture, the Founding Fathers. That's what's leading to this total decay and the death in less than a year, it looks like, of this country. But it's easier to just attribute it to some evil force out there that's doing all the evil. And it becomes even more romanticized if it's this dark force that you cannot see. And then they talk about the Great Reset and all these things. And there's a lot of truth to what is being said, but it's not, the final message is not true. And Alex Jones falls into that. So I don't agree with him, but he does say a lot of things that are valid, and he's courageous in many ways in saying many things. Even though he's lost, he's not going to ever, I don't believe he's ever going to find the promised land of truth, of the full truth. But he is daring to say something contrary to the mainstream thinking. And it's kind of sad to see what this country is doing now. Anyone who disagrees with the mainstream is going to be viciously destroyed. $965 million seems like over the top. He didn't kill anyone. It's not like he went and shot anyone. In other words, it seems like he's being punished way more than the shooter in the story. And he just said words. That's all he did. And words that turned out to be that a lot of people didn't believe anyway, and that he then later apologized for, but Democrats don't are not forgiving people. They claim to be compassionate, but they're not compassionate at all. If they hate someone, they will hate them no matter what they do. That's why it's so stupid for Republicans, the rhinos, to constantly placate or kowtow to liberal demands and desires. They want to show, oh, we are compassionate. We're not these nasty, heartless people that you think we are. And they keep doing that and thinking that now we're going to be ingratiated with the Democrats, and they will never, the Democrats will never embrace them, never, never forgive them for not being full-blown leftist, communistic Democrats. So it's futile to try to please them. And that brings me to a point, on a side note. I saw this, for some reason, I landed on this site that had a lot of images and it was a conservative, it had a conservative leaning to it. And there was, it had quotes and of famous people, and they all seemed to lean kind of towards things conservatives would like. And there was this one image of Abraham Lincoln. And next to him, a quote apparently from him that said something to the effect that I destroy an enemy when I make him my friend. That's more or less what he said, if I remember correctly. And that, when I read that, that said to me, oh, this explains a lot about his behavior. He was always trying to reach out to the Democrats. That's why he chose Andrew Johnson, the son of a bitch, as his vice president in 1864, and why he dumped Hannibal Hamlin. And that's why we had the disaster we had after he was deservedly shot to death. Then Andrew Johnson took over, and he just became the Stonewall Johnson, as we said in the previous audio snippet, hindering the Reconstruction process and the restoration of Black people in America. And so he kept reaching out and reaching out, and the Democrats never, they never agreed to reach back. And that's why he fittingly got shot by a diehard Democrat, John Wilkes Booth. That's as if to say, hey, here's how much we appreciate your you reaching out to us. Boom, you know, shot in the head. And that's how Democrats always respond to anyone who disagrees with them. They will never forgive you, and they will kill you at the first opportunity that they can. And this is exactly what they did with Alex Jones. And what is sad to me is that this is not a $965 million punishment decreed by a leftist judge. And I could be wrong on this detail, but if I'm not mistaken, it's the jury that gave the amount or that handed out the punishment of $965 million against Alex Jones. It's the jury. So you have these 12 idiot pseudo-Americans who have decided to punish this guy in this way. And that tells me that the state of America, that you can find 12 people idiotic and evil enough to do such a thing. So that tells me, you know, where we are right now. And it's this very sad environment where you can't say anything where you're in disagreement with the regime, the agenda, and it also brought to bear something that I believe we've shared in some of the earlier audio snippets about something being wrong in our system regarding these big payouts in civil cases. And I think, if I could be wrong with this, but I do believe that we've spoken on this before. And the reason why I'm bringing this up is that what I'm about to say is not something in reaction to this story. It's something that we have said before on a consistent basis, and it's something that I've been saying for years. And it has to do with these civil suits where people are paid, are forced companies, for example, to pay someone $300 million for damages and this and that. And it all stems from this runaway concept that we have about companies. And a company is treated as if it was a person and as if it was an evil entity that is going out around doing evil and needs to be punished when it does something wrong. And we spoke before about how companies are just an engine. That's all there is. They're a production engine. And they don't have a life of their own. A company is not this monster. It's not like another biological entity out there. A company is just a production engine, like a car. A car is an engine that is used to transport you from one place to another. That's all it is. And if a company, quote unquote, does something wrong or evil, it's not. It's like, for example, if a car runs into a crowd of pedestrians on the street, the car will kill all these people, but it's not the car that is the killer. You don't put the car on trial for killing the people. You put on trial the drunk driver behind the wheel who drove the car into the crowd. That's the person, that's the one that needs to be punished for committing that crime. And when a person does something like that, you don't sue him for damages. You sue him. He is put on trial for murder or aggravated assault with a deadly weapon, in this case, the vehicle. In the same way, if a company, quote unquote, does something wrong, the people who are to be tried or punished financially are not, it's not the company per se, it's the people who made the decisions that led to the damage being done by this company. It's the people. If you're going to pursue someone, it's the people. And if someone has to pay, it's the people who pay. And I do believe we've mentioned this before, and we've talked about how a company should not be taxed because a company is just a production pool, a production engine. It receives resources in the form of capital, and then it produces new goods and services. So, and as long as the company, as long as money is in a company, it is not owned by, that money is not owned by anyone. No one is wealthier because a company has $10 million more in the bank, because that will only become wealth when it's transferred from the company to the bank accounts of individuals, the employees or the CEO or whomever. That's when it becomes wealth. Otherwise, it's just capital to be invested, to be used to produce new goods and services. No one is wealthier because a certain company has $1 billion in the bank. They are wealthier when the company gives that money to them in some way, shape, or form. So that's why companies should not be taxed. And it's double taxation going on. It's only when the company pays a salary, then that becomes should be subject to tax under the Constitution. So under the new American Constitution, the concept of a company would change radically. And then as the perception of that changes, then also how a company is to be punished when a company, let's say, does something wrong, then the Constitution would be clear that you have to punish the individuals who did the wrong. Now, if the company has more money in its coffers because of some wrongdoing, then yes, that money is subject to being taken out of the coffers and used in restitution. But it has to be an exact calculation. It can't be just this random number pulled out of a juror's butt. It can't happen like that. We can't have this. It has to be a calculated number. The company has $300,000 extra in its bank accounts because they sold this bad product, and they sold X number of this of these units with a profit of so-and-so, and this is the total result, and this is what the company has to then kind of take out of its coffers to make available to pay back to consumers. So that, but without punishment, just the exact amount. It has to be very specifically delineated. It has to be a very almost scientific calculation. But if you want to punish someone for having done something wrong, then you don't punish the company. You then put the CEO or whoever it was on trial for having made the decision, and you not only punish them financially, you can also prosecute them and put them in jail, and that's even more that's even worse than just punishing the company. If a company did something very wrong, like this company had this toxic pesticide, and a lot of people have cancer and lymphoma now, and they knew about it and they were hiding it. I always hear these adverts on television about that, and sue, you know, Monsanto and whomever for having sold these pesticides or insecticides or whatever for years, and now you're sick from it. Well, this is killing people, and if the claim is true, shouldn't people be in jail for that? The people who covered up the situation in the company, that, and I believe if you really want justice, if you really want, you know, payback and you want heads to roll, that's who you should go after. But no, that's not convenient. And attorneys and the Democrats don't really care for that because it doesn't produce money. They don't want. They don't care. They just want to destroy capitalism and the companies. Ironically, a lot of these people who do all these crimes and bad things in the companies, a lot of them are diehard Democrats. Wall Street is run by Democrats. It's not run by Republicans. It's run by Democrats. They're all leftists. They love the Democrat Party. The thing is that companies should have a different treatment in the Constitution, and that would immediately transform the way not only the Constitution but people in general would view lawsuits regarding big payouts, because we would get away from this idea that we have to punish this abstract, personless entity. And all these lawsuits for billions of dollars would just disappear, it's important that when these people say that they were hurt or damaged by Alex Jones's words, the question would become, what right was violated? If Alex Jones did something wrong, what right was violated? And the only right that seems applicable is the right to a fair reputation, a right that is missing in the Constitution. There is no legal foundation in the Constitution for suing somebody for libel. It's not there in the Constitution, because the concept of that fundamental human right, the right to a fair reputation, as we said before, there are five human rights: the right to life, the right to property, the right to privacy, the right to a fair reputation, and a right to a personal domain. And we've gone through those in detail before. But because the Constitution is lacking in explaining what the rights are, we don't have an understanding of this right to privacy. And because of it, the only way to kind of... the right to a fair reputation. The only way we have for confronting someone who violates that right is through civil lawsuits where you demand cash payouts. But if your right was violated, there should be a criminal punishment associated to it, and the person should go to jail. If Alex Jones really did something so evil, then he should be going to jail, not paying out money he should be going to jail. It's like if someone rapes someone, you know, that's, can you imagine what is worse? Alex Jones saying something that only a certain small group of Americans are listening to, as opposed to a man raping a little girl. Which of the two is worse? And the guy raping this innocent little girl, this guy is not going to get sued for $965 million. He's going to go to jail. And that's what people would be clamoring for. They wouldn't say, oh, he demands he should pay the family all this money because of what he did to the little girl. No, they say go to jail, and even better if he dies in jail, because it was a fundamental violation of a right. And these people who claim to have been have had their feelings hurt, you know, if they really were that violated, Alex Jones should be in jail, not giving them money. And there was this one person as part of the verdict, apparently an FBI official, who was awarded $90 million because Alex Jones said something about him in this whole thing that apparently hurt his feelings or did something negative. And he's going to get $90 million for it, an FBI agent. And that sets a precedent that, you know, anyone who says anything that disagrees, that's disagreeable with the regime, with government officials, is going to be punished. And there are enough idiot Americans to hand out the punishment in juries like this, because this is not something that was handed out by a government official. It was the jury that decided to do this. And that's a very, very sad road we're going down. And if we had a constitution that explained the concept of a company, that explained the concept of the right to a fair reputation, what that entails, what that is and isn't, and a constitution that really reflected and clearly laid out the right to life, because the right to freedom of expression is part of the right to life. These things were clear, then we'd have a system that would not be conducive to what happened with Alex Jones. And I don't think that a conservative can put these things that I just said together and make sense of it. I don't think they understand what I'm trying to say here, because they are trapped in understanding that what we have is enough. And they don't see that if we had been changing little things along the way, then a lot of the things we're seeing right now would not be happening, because these people who had their reputation damaged, I mean, look at what Trump has suffered. His reputation is constantly attacked. And who is suing anyone for $900 million in damages when they say something false about Trump? No one, because that's okay. Because the right to a fair reputation is not clearly defined in the Constitution, so there are no clear parameters that we can go by to defend our reputation properly. It's all, you know, dependent on who's being smeared and who the judge is and all these things. It's all very subjective because it's not clearly laid out. And if someone has his reputation smeared, that should bring criminal consequences to it. But we can't do that because our current legal system doesn't recognize that right as a fundamental right. When a fundamental right gets violated, there are criminal consequences. We could go on about all of this and how messed up the legal system is in America, but we'll leave it at that. And the third thing that I wanted to talk about something I read in a story that drew my attention, and it had to do with Columbus Day. which happened in America. It's celebrated, I think, on the first Monday of the, I think it's the second Monday of October or something to that effect. But in most other countries in the rest of the Americas, it's celebrated on a specific date, October 12th, because if I remember correctly, that's the date when Columbus discovered America. And this date, Columbus Day, has been maligned greatly because leftists especially hate Columbus because he represents the oppression of the evil Europeans and all that, of the indigenous people, and this is the land of the Amerindians and blah, 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 and they spew all this hatred. And I always say to myself, well, you whitey who are clearly descended from Europeans, you clearly have no Amerindian blood in you. If Europeans should have never come here and conquered this land and taken over, what the hell are you doing here? Get the hell out of here. Just leave. Don't be a hypocrite and talk about how evil the white culture is. If you're white and you're here and you think whites are should not be here, get the hell out of here. Get the hell out of the U.S. Get the hell out of the Americas. Go home. Go back to Europe. Go to wherever you deserve to be and shut the hell up. Why are you speaking all this stupidity and this contradiction and claiming to be this defender of the Amerindians? If you really care about the Amerindians so much and the Europeans should not be here, take your European rear end and get the hell out of here. Take your European culture and everything that you brought here that contaminated this wonderful land and get the hell out of this continent. I find it just totally, totally contradictory and ridiculous when they start talking like that. And this article kind of talks against, all this hatred against Columbus. And basically the article is something like, the title of it is more or less like Christopher Columbus saying, "You're welcome. Like, you're welcome for all I did, all the good I did for the Americas." Because Columbus, and I was thinking about this earlier, that Columbus, and I've said this before in previous years, that and I think it's also been said in these audio snippets, that if it weren't for the Europeans coming, the Americas would be a backward continent, a jungle. Just look at how Latin America looks like. It would be a million times worse because if you go into the inner, you go inland into the heart of these countries in Latin America, what you see is poverty, these Amerindian people living in horrible conditions and living in illiteracy and backwardness. And you say, oh, that's the oppression of the capitalist system. No, no, no. They've always lived like that. They were living like that before. And that's just a continuation because it's a dead culture. And when Columbus came here, you had the Aztecs, the Incas, and the other peoples here. And these empires that were here were evil. They were vicious. And what this article points out is that, and this is something I've said before, and people tend to ignore this, the Aztecs were vicious conquerors. They subjugated, they oppressed a lot of their neighbors. They conquered their neighbors and were vicious with them, brutal. And that's one of the reasons why Columbus and the Spaniards were able to conquer these big empires with so few people. Because a lot of the native Amerindians that were the neighbors saw the Spaniards almost as liberators, because it was like, oh my goodness, someone is coming to beat this evil empire, and they a lot of them allied themselves with the Spaniards to defeat the Aztecs, to defeat the Incas, because these were evil people. They were still doing human sacrifices. These temples that these quasi pyramids that the leftists always praise about, Amerindians, the Aztec temples and little pyramids that are so admired. These were used to throw dead bodies from the top of the temple down the steps. They were brutal and vicious people, and they were backward at that. They always say, the Europeans are so arrogant. They think that they had this great civilization, but the Amerindians already did this and did that, did the other. And when you go through the list of the great things that they always say the Amerindians did, it's all stuff that other cultures did hundreds and thousands of years earlier. When they talk about the great temples that the Amerindians built, my goodness, I say to myself, haven't you idiots heard of the pyramids in Egypt that were built thousands of years before and much larger, much more incredible. Look at what the Babylonians did, the hanging Babylonian gardens, all these amazing things. And when they talk about the astronomical advances of these Amerindians and blah, 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 and a lot of that was already being done in Europe way before that. And some talk about, the Amerindians, some of them had already a 20-based numeric system, and they could do these additions and all this and that. And you go, my goodness, Europe was already doing that hundreds and thousands of years earlier. And look at Euclid, the Euclidean geometry that was, I think, was developed, and I could be wrong, but it was before Christ, 300, 400 BC by the Greeks. This advanced geometry with postulates and axioms and all this developed logic, intricate mathematical complex logic developed by the Greeks 400 years, 300 years before Christ. Thousands of years ago, Pythagoras and the Pythagorean theorem, these theoretical proofs of geometric principles, all this advanced stuff that was being done by the Greeks thousands of years earlier. But that's okay, that's like normal. But an Amerindian can count beans in a 20-base system, and my goodness, that is amazing. And when they start praising these simple little things, it's almost patronizing. They don't realize that these white liberals don't understand how patronizing it is. Like saying, these people that we think are so stupid actually were able to do this. It's like saying, this guy can count to 10. That's how advanced he is. And he's a grown-ass adult. And he can count to 10. Oh, my goodness. How amazing. And it's so insulting and patronizing without them realizing it. But the Amerindians didn't even have the concept of a wheel. I could be wrong with this, but as far as I know, at least in the northern part of the Americas, I think they didn't, they weren't using wheels. And you go, my goodness, the humans were using wheels all over the world thousands of years earlier, and these brilliant Amerindians, it never occurred to them to use a wheel to transport things more easily. Like, my goodness, not too bright, not the brightest or sharpest tool in the human shed. And the thing is that if they had been allowed to remain in control of the Americas, or be the only people in the Americas, because they were really never in control of it, but they inhabited the land, this would still be a primitive outpost. Europeans came and brought civilization to the place. What I want to mention is a couple of things in this article that brought sadness to me, and it's like a reflection of the condition of the country. And before I say this, I do have to mention Columbus, malign as he was. And speaking of people who have their reputation smeared because people disagree with them, he is one of them. He was a very devout Christian, and a person of principle, committed to ideas. And he was not just this crazy conquistador, just here for the gold and for self glorification, which is the case with a lot of the other Spaniards who came along later. But he was not like that, and he was a man of character. And I'm going to say something here that relates to this. In this article, it says, near the beginning, thank God for the Catholic patriarchy that brought civilization to one of the most savage dumps on planet Earth. And I agree with everything in that statement except for the beginning of it. And that's what brings one of the things that brought sadness to me. Like, the people who are close to understanding the truth still don't get it. When he says, thank God for the Catholic patriarchy. First of all, there was no Catholics and Protestants before when Christopher Columbus came to America. The Americas, he arrived in 1492, as we all know, when he sailed the ocean blue. And that was 25 years before the Protestant Reformation of 1517. So there was no Catholics and Protestants. It was just the Christian church or whatever version of it there was. So for him to say the Catholic patriarchy is a little bit of a, it tells me that this fellow or person, A.J. Rice is his or her name, is apparently a Catholic, because it was like an excuse to praise Catholicism. It shows a lack of historical awareness of really what Catholicism is. And it also, I think, shows a lack of awareness of Columbus as a person, because I am totally convinced, I could be wrong with this, but based on what I've read about this man, I am totally convinced that if he had lived to see the Protestant Reformation, because he died in 1506, 11 years before the Protestant Reformation, and if he had lived in those days, he would have been a Protestant, because he was more aligned with these ideas of searching for God personally, as opposed to just following religion, which is what the Catholic sect more or less tried to uphold. You just follow religion, follow traditions, follow this agenda. And Protestants were looking for a personal relationship with their God. And so for him, for this person to say, thank God for the Catholic patriarchy that brought civilization, it's just ignorance, because it doesn't. It's the lack of understanding of who this man was, Columbus. And when they say patriarchy, it just ticked me off even more and saddened me, because as some of you who have read the postings in the articles on the website where these recordings are posted, you will know that I constantly criticize the church for being a matriarchy. It's not a patriarchy, it's a matriarchy, and it's been like that for almost 2,000 years, or at least 1,900 years. It's been a matriarchy, not because it's run by women, but it's run by people who have the woman side of things. And that sounds strange, but if you read the postings, you would know what we're talking about. It's a matriarchy. It's run by the feminine side of man, even if it's run by men. It's the feminine side of man that is not trying to dominate the male side, you could say. But you'd have to read the postings to know what I'm referring to. But the thing is, this person doesn't have a clue, and he or she is a reflection of of the conservatives were close to the edge of the River Jordan, but never crossed it to enter the promised land of truth. And for this person to thank the Catholic patriarchy, obviously this person doesn't understand the hell that is Latin America, that was dominated by Catholicism. After the Spaniards came, they established Catholicism throughout the place, and it's a place of corruption. Yes, it's much better than it was before with the Amerindians, but it's still very bad. The true progress and civilization and liberty and flow came from the Protestants who came afterwards to the U.S., to southern Canada, I guess. And they were Protestants. Protestantism, these are the people who made the Americas explode with prosperity and freedom. The people from Mexico on down. Just look, if you cross the border from California into Tijuana, you see the difference. That's Catholicism on the Tijuana side. And on the northern side, you see English Protestantism, if you want to call it the Anglo-Saxon Protestantism. Well, at least not so much anymore because California is dying. But at least you know what I'm trying to say. It is like cross, like night and day, just crossing that one little line from the U.S. into Mexico, and it's just a completely different atmosphere. It's sad and corrupt, and it's bereft of hope and life. I can't quite explain it to you. It is just such a drastic difference. That's what Catholicism has brought, because Catholicism ended up being a merging of Amerindian culture with the European culture. You know, what liberals have always had dreams about. And when those two merge in an unholy way, it just leads to disaster. And that's what you have in the Americas. So, and Columbus was not a Catholic. He ended up in conflict with the Catholic monarchy in Spain. A lot of people don't know this, but he was kind of demoted, kind of almost chucked to the side once he had discovered the New World. It's like the king and queen no longer had a use for him in Spain. And they had made an agreement with him to pay him a certain commission and all this stuff, and they used an excuse of something that happened during his third voyage to the Americas. They used that as an excuse to demote him, and by demoting him, they said, "We no longer are obligated to pay you under the contract that we had with you," and that's how they kind of stole a lot of money from him and his heirs that he had earned through by contract with the king and queen of Spain. And interestingly, on his third voyage, what happened was there was this guy who hated his guts, and he raised some Bobadilla, son of a bitch, some Spaniard. Spaniards are cowardly. Christopher Columbus was Italian, by the way. Some say he was maybe from Barcelona or from Seville or maybe from Portugal, but I do believe that he really was from Italy. Maybe half Italian, half Portuguese, who knows. But he, I believe, was not Spaniard. The thing is, there was the Spaniards who came to the Americas, they were very greedy and very evil, a lot of them. The thing is that one of them, one of the people who came from Spain and was in one of these islands, he hated Columbus, and he accused Columbus of these horrible crimes, like he was doing all this, all these evil things to the people, and cutting out people's tongues, and anyone who disagreed with him, he'd get cut up in pieces, and he would parade the pieces of the bodies, you know, all over town to show people, you know, if you disagree with me, I'm going to do this to you too. Kind of like what's being done to Alex Jones and to anyone who disagrees with the regime, you know, that sort of thing. And that was done to Columbus. His reputation was smeared. And the king and queen, when they heard these allegations, they demoted him and never really paid him what he had to be paid and give him the dues and honor that he deserved for all his effort. You know, he died young. He died at the age of 54, I think it was. And he was sick for the last part of his life. Many think that he had some sort of arthritic condition that really, really affected him. So he was not a Catholic who was compliant with Catholicism in Spain and all that. He was he died in conflict, and he sued the monarchy, and apparently his family had a partial victory in those lawsuits, but nothing more than that. And so he was a very devout person. Very, very different from your typical Catholic. But the thing that gave me even greater sadness was, as I was reading this story by A.J. Rice, this article, this person was saying all these true things about how evil the Amerindians were, the Aztecs, the Incas, and all that, and then he mentions at the very end, it says, let me read the second to last paragraph. It says, "We'll never know what the Americas would have become had Columbus never arrived. We do know, based on science, that oppression and brutality were part of the human condition in the New World long before any Vikings or other Europeans stepped anywhere in the hemisphere. After all, human beings tend to be generally atrocious. But for all their faults, the Europeans did expand scientific knowledge, the Christian faith, and the freedom that we enjoy today, in part by learning from English history, particularly the English Civil War, and from the Iroquois system of governance. America's founders were keen students of history and human nature. So thanks to the patriarchy and those wicked Europeans and their thirst for knowledge, you're free to bash or praise Chris Columbus as you see fit. Thank the patriarchy. You're welcome." A lot of stupidity in that statement, a lot of truth, but mingled with a lot of stupidity. Again, it's saying this person has no understanding of the difference between the Spanish conquest and the Anglo-Saxon, the British invasion, let's call it like that. The British invasion and the Spanish conquest are two different stories in the Americas, completely different. That's why North America, you know, the English-speaking North America is prosperous, and why everything south of English-speaking North America is just poverty and crime and violence, and why all these illegals are coming in. And this person seems to have no separation of the two, no understanding of what happened with the Spanish side and the Anglo-Saxon side. No understanding. To him or her, it's just the same thing. And then the patriarchy. Again, this stupid thing about the patriarchy. No. Spain was a matriarchy. Even literally, it was a matriarchy. It was Queen Isabella. But that's not what made it a matriarchy. But even literally, you have to admit, it was a matriarchy. Spain brought matriarchy full-blown to the Americas south of the border. It's not patriarchy. And there was a measure of patriarchy brought by the Anglo-Saxons. That's what made the North American side, from the English-speaking North American side, so different to the rest of the Americas, because there was a measure of patriarchy, but it was just a measure of it, not completely. And that lack of full patriarchy is what has us in the problems we're in right now. When this person says America's founders were keen students of history and human nature, again, you can see there, a founding father worshiper. I have no idea how these people just idealize the founding fathers. Like, they're these wise men standing on a hilltop, these philosophers who knew it all and understood them. This is how cult of personality looks like. This is cult of personality. When you start idealizing these people and they are perfect and they are wise men that we are to look to for guidance. And that's what Catholicism, the Catholic sect, brings with it too. This worship of saints, you know, these middlemen who are the go-between between them and their God. So instead of having a direct relationship with God, if you believe God exists, have a relationship with him. Don't pretend that like, they're these middlemen. I mean, either there's no God or if there's a God. If there's a God, talk to him directly. If you don't believe in a God, then don't believe in anything. But don't do this middle thing where you have this thing in between that you worship these middlemen. And that's kind of a symbolism of everything that's wrong. You know, America is halfway there. It's not doing what needs to be done. It's always just halfway in between. This is idolatry. America's founders were keen students of history and human nature. No, they weren't. I mean, yes, they said some interesting things. You read the Federalist Papers, and Thomas Jefferson said some very interesting things. But look at the Constitution, for crying out loud. It's a piece of rubbish based on what we've been studying and talking about, relatively speaking, to what we need to get to. It's rubbish. It doesn't have the five fundamental rights well delineated. It's a hodgepodge of things. It didn't even abolish slavery until the 13th Amendment in the 1860s. It doesn't have clear concepts on voter fraud. I mean, these men who were so keen on understanding human nature, well, couldn't they have anticipated that there was going to be the possibility of voter fraud? And why is that so unclear? There's nothing there to fight voter fraud. That's why under the Constitution, the current regime that stole the election in 2020 cannot be attacked, because we don't have any foundation in the Constitution against voter fraud. These men were clearly not that brilliant. Abortion cannot be attacked or from the Constitution. And you'd say, well, there was no abortion in those days. Yeah, but as we've said before, the Constitution is so lacking in protecting the right to life that it doesn't even protect the life of the born. As we've said a million times, you can get murdered in America, and that still is not a violation of your constitutional rights, because there's nothing in the Constitution about your right to life. There isn't. So even if you're born already, the Constitution doesn't say anything about protecting your rights. That's why it's kind of weird. If we're true constitutionalists, what power does the federal government have to indict and convict someone of murder? Because if the Constitution is what defines the powers of the federal government, then the federal government does not have authority to try anyone for murder. You see what I'm saying? It's not in the Constitution. So that's the wonderful document that these brilliant men created. I know they had a lot of good qualities, and they did their best. But as the song says, you know, they'd have to sing that song that says, I did my best, but I guess my best wasn't good enough. That's what the founding fathers did. They were not evil men, relatively speaking. But relative to the idealization that we have made of them, they really are full-blown idiots. And that's why I speak so harshly about them, because we've turned these men who had a lot of good qualities into these super gods, and they were idiotic in many things that they said and did and thought. They didn't understand because they were limited. They were limited, and they were willfully limited, I believe. They chose to be that way. Brilliant as some of them were, and noble and righteous as many of them were, I do believe, sincerely, they were overall a very lacking people, and we've been building this whole country on this foundation. that had a lot of good things in it, but was not complete. And we're still idealizing them. But the thing that drew my attention finally, and this is finally getting to what I wanted to say, was when he said, he referred to the, I'm assuming this person is a he, the person's name is A.J. Rice, president and CEO of Publius PR or something like that, Publius PR. This person said that the freedoms that we enjoy today, in part by learning from English history, particularly the English Civil War, and from the Iroquois or Iroquois system of governance. So he's saying that we learned a lot of our freedoms from the Iroquois system of governance. And this person has a link there under the word Iroquois. And if you click on the link, it takes you to this PBS site, interestingly enough. And PBS, a leftist organization funded by the government, by our taxpayer dollars. This PBS article talks about how the title of it is "How the Iroquois Great Law of Peace Shaped U.S. Democracy." So it's, you know, because to the liberals, the Native Americans, the Amerindians were these brilliant people, the noble men who were running this idyllic paradise here until the evil European showed up. And apparently there, I didn't know this, and there is some truth to it. You know, if you take out the hyperbole about how great the Amerindians were and how evil the Europeans were, the article does say a lot of things that seem to be very, very, very true and valid to consider. They talk about the Iroquois Confederacy that apparently was they drafted this peace treaty, five nations. There were five nations of Amerindians that were fighting each other, and they decided to get together and form a confederacy. They finally, you know, said, let's have peace. They drafted this contract, and that became their Iroquois Confederacy of these five nations that were fighting each other all the time. And that was the story of the Amerindian life. It was just fighting, just this tribe fighting this tribe, the Aztecs fighting the Olmecs or whatever, and all these other people just fighting each other all the time. And that's their life of conflict. That's the wonderful paradise that the Europeans came to ruin. And they formed this confederacy, the Iroquois, these five nations, and apparently the founding fathers made a lot of references to this Iroquois Confederacy and used it as a way to talk about the unity of the 13 colonies. And apparently one of these Iroquois wise men spoke about the importance of unity and how if you put five arrows together, it's much more difficult to break than, you know, each arrow separately. And they said in this article that that's the motivation for why one of our seals in America has the eagle with one of its claws holding on to a bunch of arrows. If you've seen that somewhere, I think in the dollar bill, you have that, I think. And they say that those arrows in the claw of the eagle are inspired by this Iroquois guy who said the thing about the arrows. And the idea was the 13 colonies, if you put them together as 13 arrows, they are unbreakable compared to each colony separately. So apparently a lot of the founding fathers praised the Iroquois system, confederacy, and used it as a motivation for unity between the colonies and so forth. And I know that this person, A.J. Rice, who put this link and made this reference to the Iroquois Confederacy in this PBS article, was trying to be kind of like try to be ironic by using the leftists and their liberal talk against them to kind of prove the wisdom of the founding fathers. But I now there's the double irony that I'm using his reference to his reference to the liberal league as proof of how flawed the founding fathers were, because if the federal system was really inspired, and I do believe in large part that it might have been this from here, that if it was really inspired by the Amerindians, no wonder it's messed up. No wonder federalism doesn't work. It was inspired by five tribes, five nations of Amerindians fighting each other. And that's how we got the concept of federalism. And remember, these are five nations. So we are equating colonies with nations. And that's, you have to start going that route. And that's what we ended up with, 13 separate sovereign states. And we've talked about the 11th Amendment. You know what I mean by the sovereignty of the state, where the sovereign, the state is more important than the individual. It's born, oh, no wonder federalism is born out of a system of five independent nations. We are not, and that's why we are going to be remain divided the way we are, because federalism has created this horrible hodgepodge of separate little countries trying to be integrated under this very, very informal and incomplete and messed up federal system. That's why federalism doesn't work. So it was kind of ironic that this person who tried to use the leftist website to confirm the greatness of the founding fathers is actually confirming how really flawed they were. They were not keen, as keen students of history and human nature as the conservatives think they are. So that was a very sad thing for me to read. And these three things are, in many ways, a even further confirmation of how messed up we are. That the three things were the Venezuelans being sent back to Mexico, and just that one group being targeted. All the other illegals are welcome. But the Venezuelans have to go home because they might bring in these crazy thoughts of freedom and anti-communism, and we can't take the risk, so got to send them back to Mexico. So that's a very sad thing, and it's interesting that this is happening shortly after we began to kind of mention them specifically, the Venezuelans, as people who maybe deserve an opportunity to stay here. In ways that other illegals don't, and then the bite me regime responds by targeting them to send them back. The second thing, the Alex Jones story, you know, the thing with the $965 billion for saying something, giving a false accusation that this was a hoax or this was not really a massacre, and he was just speculating. And that's because from that spirit that moves him, that the spirit of conspiracy and all this darkness, and because it allows conservatives, the diehard conservatives, to have an excuse for the way the world is right now, instead of looking inside and saying, the weakness is from within, that the destruction is coming from within. And they go, yeah, it's from operatives inside, you know, the deep state and blah, blah, blah. No. I'm talking about you. The problem is inside of you. You are believing that your holy founding fathers and your holy constitution is the answer to everything. And the truth is speaking to you and saying, no, it is not. No, it is not. No, it will never be. And I will let you be destroyed by your own idols and by your own constitution and by your own system if you are not willing to admit how wrong it is. And they don't. No, it's always some dark force on the outside. So Alex Jones fell prey to that. And now he's suffering the consequences. And now he's being thrown to the lions and being forced to pay. And the irony is, as I read that, I thought to myself, interesting, because O.J. Simpson, as you may recall, he was criminally tried for murdering his wife, ex-wife, and that and her friend, Nicole Brown Simpson and the young man, and to my shame, I don't remember his name right now, and I don't mean that on purpose, but Ron Brown, I think his name was, the thing is that, Ron something, but the thing is that he was criminally tried and he was let go, but then he was tried in civil court and he was punished, he was found guilty, and a jury sentenced him to pay millions of dollars to the family of Ron, my goodness, I don't remember his name, but to the family of the young man whom he murdered. So it kind of shows the irony of what we were saying, that rights that should be punished criminally in our system are being punished financially only. And the sad thing is that I think to this day O.J. Simpson hasn't paid a penny of the millions of dollars that he was ordered to pay, because he tied it up in some sort of legal technicality where that money is supposed to come only from certain funds or certain account or something like that. His attorneys kind of put it in some sort of legal entanglement, and so he can continue to earn income from other stuff and doesn't have to allot that money to the payment, because it's some trickery, legal trickery that he does. So he's getting away with it, you know, laughing all the way to the bank with it. And sadly, and I said to myself, well, I don't think O.J. Simpson will ever be forced to pay that money, but I think Alex Jones, they will not rest until he pays every last penny of that. And because the idea was to bankrupt him. They got a jury of people who hated conservatives, and the plan is to wipe him off, destroy him financially, and shut him up for good. And it's very sad to see that happening in America so blatantly, by a jury, not by politicians or a corrupt judge, by the jury, a jury of his peers, supposedly 12 peers who have done this. And it says a lot about the state of the country. And then this story about that refers to Columbus and the Iroquois Indians, which again, as you read it, it just tells you conservatives are not getting it. They're still trapped in this misunderstanding. They're trapped in their Catholicism, and I mean that in a figurative sense, a Catholicism of saint worship. They're worshiping their founding fathers, and their sacrament is the Constitution. That's their holy sacraments are all in there, and they take this very badly written document, and elevate it to this level of the greatest literary work. I mean, you can take Plato's Republic and elevate it to a great literary work, because it's very, that is interesting and complex and all that. But, you know, the Constitution, even as a literary document, is very, very bad. It's just terrible and not even good reading. So that tells me we are messed up. And then to have this final confirmation that federalism is born out of Amerindian nonsense, and you go, my goodness, no wonder. And this guy, instead of seeing it as a sign, okay, well, I said all these bad things about Amerindians throughout this whole article, and now I end it by saying one of our core values comes from the culture that produced all the bad stuff I wrote about in this whole story. And the irony is, like, my goodness, you don't see it. You don't see the contradiction. You're so blinded by your worship, your Catholic style worship, saint worship, that you can't, and it, you're so blinded that you can't distinguish between what the Spaniards did and what the Anglo-Saxons did, and you don't differentiate between them. And you don't realize Columbus was really not a Spaniard in the Catholic Spaniard sense of the word. He was a completely different person. So it's a person who doesn't distinguish between the shades of truth. And if you can't distinguish between shades, then if everything is just black or white, you know, European good, traditions good, and liberals are bad, and that's all there is, then you're never going to see what's wrong with you and change. And America is less than 12 months. I think it's 11 months now, or a little over 11 months that we have left. Like 11 and a half or less. But time is running out, and I don't see a change. And I guess we were not getting to Black America. We were going to talk about the 15th Amendment in this audio snippet, and I thought these three things would be quick things to say. So these are like three more signs that America is going down. It's not like the other four signs that we talked about earlier, but they are further confirmation that we are not doing too well. And I don't see how things are going to change. Thank you very much for listening.